Another request for public hearing, this one involving the crab fishery. Chief?
Sir. So last month, staff presented the results of the Baywide Winter Dredge Survey, which is the 28th survey that's occurred. There were two questions left that didn't get adequately answered. The first one was by Mr. Erskine, who was wondering why the male crabs did not have biological reference points. And at the time, staff didn't have this information here. And also, although I'm a member of the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, I'm not a attending member very much anymore. Joe Cimino is, so I'm going to let Joe answer this question. I did let Mr. Erskine know that we would address this question today, and he said that sounds good. So I let Joe go ahead and address the male situation.
Okay. So this is kind of gone from the report that CBSAC now gives, but certainly not forgotten. I'll be brief, happy to answer any questions, and then happy to turn any tough questions over to Rom. So, there was a big regime change after the last stock assessment in 2011. We went from control rules and target biological reference points that focused on the total adult population, males and females together, to just female-specific, and those were presented to you last month. I'll just stick with this, yeah. But one of the things that we did show was, the male abundance has been considerably lower than the average annual variability that we're seeing with females. We're having some great years. We're having some downturn years. But male abundance has been hanging at a fairly low rate, especially since we consider that from 1998 through 2008, we were really hitting the stock hard, and the total abundance was low. So at that time, although the stock assessment suggested biological reference points, just for the females, CBSAC was still recommending a conservation trigger for the male abundance, and that trigger would just be that CBSAC would be recommending management measures or caution to managers if the levels got to a certain point. So that level was decided on based on empirical evidence. We had 2 years where it seemed like the exploitation rate or the amount of males removed in a year in comparison to the male abundance level at the beginning of that year hit high or low points, depending on how you look at it. So in 1992, male abundance was not particularly high, but the harvest, as you can all imagine, back in those years was pretty heavy, and so the exploitation rate was close to 44%. We saw it one other time going above 30%, and that was at 33% in 2004, I think that is. So the idea behind setting an exploitation rate, and you can see that line is drawn right at 33%, is that we know that this, cautionary tale. We know that the stock has gone that far and survived a harvest level of, that 1992 rate nearly at 40%. So that's where they put the conservation trigger, right at that 33% level where we saw the exploitation rate in 2004. And again, that trigger is something that CBSAC is monitoring. If it hits that level, they're going to be recommending caution to the Baywide jurisdiction manager. Yeah. And I do want to say that as a group, CBSAC is still also keeping an eye on the old control rule of an exploitation rate of 53% for both males and females. And again, especially in combination, if we saw that being exceeded and low male abundance, we would be making a recommendation. As we did this year, although there isn't a specific trigger for juveniles, CBSAC did put out a statement saying that we did feel that there was a need for caution. So, One other thing about this is we talk a lot about drawing that line and saying where we are in relation to that line. There's two things to remember. This is a survey estimate of abundance that plays into the exploitation rate. And that estimate of abundance for both males and females depends on a scalar. And it's an assumption that a certain amount of juveniles are surviving and making it to adults every single year. And it's just a constant rate used from a one-year estimate that assumed that 40% of the juveniles were surviving to adulthood. So when we give either abundance estimates or an exploitation fraction, we're making that assumption. And so when you see years like 2010 and 11, which aren't all that far away from that level, there's always that possibility that, you know, we're even closer or are going past it. That's all I have for you on the exploitation fraction for males.
Thank you.
Okay, question number two came from Mr. Ballard, and I'm going to have a little introduction to this. I think the question was, this survey, what's the predictability of it? In other words, you know, how do you know what's going to occur from one stage to the other, juveniles to spawning age females? How do you know you're going to be able to track this so that you can set management measures? And I thought about it a little bit afterwards, of course, but while I was here the other month, I mentioned that at least for the juveniles, I think that's pretty well explained what happens there. This is what we're left with the winter dredge survey after all the natural variation environmental influences take hold. And there's still predation after that because we mentioned the very unusual 2012 situation with 581 million juveniles. And this came up the other night at CMAQ as well with all the red drum that moved through here all the way to Delaware. And also cannibalism, that, you know, that was an unusual situation. So you have all this information, which is tough to really draw a lot of conclusions from. You can try. We do. And I think it's easier to look at this in terms of total abundance. And one thing that I want to emphasize is that you just saw the male abundance. The male abundance is completely counter to the overall abundance and to the female abundance. So that leads you to believe that this trough from about 1998 to 2008 or so really was a female crab abundance situation. And another thing, although we can't really say this is staggering, there is a positive correlation if you look at 2008 through 2017 in terms of the juveniles down here and what do we have here with the age one plus crabs. That's male and females. So there is some correlation there. But again, it's tough to think there would be a higher correlation when we know the juveniles are so variable. So what's important about this is that 2008, that trough was addressed directly by this commission, by Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and by the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, and there was a 34% reduction in the harvest of female crabs. And our measures, the principal measures, were that we instituted larger cull rings for crab pots, and we also raised the peeler size, the harvestable legal size, from 3 inches to 3 1/4 and to 3 1/2 once July 16th this year. We also had a situation where we looked at the winter dredge fishery, which I'm going to flip over to next, and we actually closed the winter dredge fishery in April of that year. In the sanctuary area, we pushed back the dates. We had been June 1 through September 15th from a long time back. And so finally by 2008, we set everything back to May 1. We had advice both from Dr. Lipschitz and from Dr. McConaughey, who was a commission member at the time, that there was an eventful late May spawn. So we pushed that back. We ran into a little bit of a problem in that the legislature controlled the date for the historical sanctuary, this 1942 sanctuary of 146 miles, square miles. So it was till 2009 before we could set them both back to May 1. As you probably know from last year, those dates were moved a little bit, and I'm going to go over that today a little bit later as well. We also eliminated the five-pot recreational crab license back in 2008, only to reinstitute it in 2009 with a season from June 1 to September 15th. So all these measures together, this staff did the best it could do, as did the staffs in other jurisdictions, to configure a 34% reduction in female harvest. So in a way, 2008 forward is really a different regime than previously. Yes, the commission did have management measures in 1994. It did have a large turnout at Warwick High School of hundreds of people in 1996. But those management measures were before science was really here on blue crab, and they were well-intentioned. I think if you look at those overall, you'll probably find that many of them were aimed at the spawning stock and to increase spawning potential. So what Dr. Lipschitz did was sanctuary extensions at three different times, 1994, 2000, and 2001. Those were all aimed to increase spawning potential. And I think those were good intentions by the commission, but some may have not addressed the situation with the female crabs directly. So for that reason, Mr. Ballard, I have shown this information that Megan compiled in terms of 2008 forward. And I think this tells you a lot because, first of all, you can see the total crabs again. You can get the rank of where they ranked. And we see that 2017 was 11th. You can see the juvenile crab abundance, and these are all in millions, so 125 million. And the way the scientists look at this, that's about 48% male, 52% female as juveniles. And then you can see the rank, and you can see out of 28, we're 25th. So a very low abundance of juvenile crabs. From last month, you know the spawning crabs, the female spawning crabs, age 1 plus, you know, that's ranking as first, the highest, and you have to go back a little ways to 2010 to have something similar. Of course, the target for everyone is 215 million crabs, spawning age female crabs, pardon me. And then you can look at the harvest, and you have a little better handle of maybe looking at how these come together. And so I thought you had a good question. I thought it was something that, you know, makes everyone think a little bit just about how far we're moving forward. The brilliant thought that I had after the fact was to let you know before Dr. Lipschitz has some information that we really have addressed this on a year-by-year basis. And we really do respond to what the juveniles are the last 4 years, what the juveniles are, as well as the spawning age females. And we try adjust for both because we know that by August and going to the late fall, most of those juveniles are exploitable by the fisheries, and then they serve a dual purpose. They will be our 2018 spawning stock. So, so Dr. Lipschitz, if you want to sort of add to that, since this is a survey you've been involved with from the start, on the predictability, maybe Mr. Ball would ask his question again, and that might help out.
I didn't know my question had this big of an impact.
It did.
Yes.
It did. But, because it's key to why we do our management.
Be careful what you ask.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing that I did want to add is that when we're talking about predictability from the winter dredge survey, there are really two issues that we need to deal with. One is how well it predicts the harvest in a given year versus how well the different stages predict each other. The winter dredge survey predicts the upcoming harvest extremely well. It's about 83% as opposed to the 33%. So we can come very close by our winter dredge survey, the crabs that we catch that are predict the upcoming harvest. When we start dealing with abundance, now this is a separate matter, the abundance of the age zeros, the juveniles, or the abundance, we're very comfortable with the abundance of adults. It's the abundance of the age zeros, the young juveniles, that we don't quantify as well as we do the age ones. And that's primarily because a large fraction of those juveniles are in shallow waters where we don't sample. Now, we are VIMS, we're going to propose an initiative to the state where we can add on a shallow water component to the survey. I think that would really help the survey very much so to be accurate. The other problem when you deal with age zeros is that you have a lot of factors. Yes, you have a lot of factors that affect those juveniles that are outside our control. The juveniles, when they're coming back into the bay, they're susceptible to pelagic water column predators. They're susceptible to changes in the currents. They're then susceptible to the predators that come in that are in the bay itself in the seagrass beds, like puppy drum, potentially in 2012. They also cannibalize. So if there are a lot of large crabs around, cannibalism goes up. So it's much more difficult to actually try to predict abundance based on juvenile numbers as we have them now. But for the harvest, we're very confident that we're pretty much dead on with that, because for the most part, the crabs that we survey are those that will grow into the fishery, that either are already legal size or which will grow into the fishery that year. So I don't know if that, hopefully that answers your question, or if you have any others, happy to answer them.
Yeah, I mean, thinking back to my original question, I mean, it was stemming from a business background where we're constantly looking at charts and graphs and trying to figure out the variability in Y explained by the variability in X. Right. And what I was wondering, looking at this chart of six different columns, was, you know, how are we using sound measures and making good management decisions based off specific number triggers? As we heard Joe just saying, we're looking at this red line and then we see it go above, but how much variability is in there?
Right.
And that's what I was trying to get a handle on.
Okay.
Is
okay. So let me add just a couple things on the so we focus on the spawning stock. Management focuses on the spawning stock, and we have a fairly rich set of evidence that demonstrates clearly that there is a spawning stock recruitment relationship. So when you have more females on average, you're going to get more juveniles on average, and we feel that the number of females predicts that by about 50%. So the other 50% that's unexplained by the number of females is explained by predation, by environmental events, and so on. So for that, we have solid evidence from different data sets, not just the winter dredge survey. So we're comfortable with that, and that's what the commission used then to manage the fishery. And we saw an increase immediately, an immediate response of the population to the management actions in 2008. And we now have data that shows that there was an immediate reduction in exploitation rate of females from 2008 to the present that remains of the females, where we didn't see that in the males. The exploitation rate hasn't changed much. So we have several lines of evidence that says this is the way we really should be managing the stock. Of course, there are other unknowns that we still don't have, like juveniles. We don't have a reference point for males, but there's little evidence that the males are as necessary for spawning as females, because a single male can serve probably 5 to 10 females in a season. So because of that, we're not as concerned. Now, that's setting aside socioeconomic issues. You'd rather have big males, so that's a separate matter. But in terms of the sustainability of the population, right, we don't worry as much about it, because there's no evidence that that is as critical as the females.
So, Ron, let me ask a question here, since we're we're on juveniles at this point here. The juvenile numbers have fluctuated pretty substantially here in recent years, from that whopping $581 million in 2012 that mostly disappeared, down to 111, and we're not an awful lot above that. So let me ask this basic question. Has the Winter Dredge Survey methodology on measuring juvenile abundance levels changed in any meaningful way since, say, 2012?
No.
Are we looking at apples and apples with these numbers?
We're looking at apples and apples in terms of the survey. What is one of the things that's going to influence that number is the year-to-year changes in, for instance, water temperature. So how many of those very young crabs that come in are actually grow up enough to move into the deeper areas where we can survey them? So that's one source of error that we have. The level of variation that you see in juveniles is not unexpected for the blue crab. The blue crab, virtually an annual stock, it's recruitment driven, and the vagaries of nature and so on are what drives a lot of that variation. That's why we focus on the spawning stock, because we know, and that's why I'm fairly confident that we have a good solid spawning stock, and we do need to be a little bit cautious about the juveniles, maybe protecting some greater fraction of them this year, so that we have a good spawning stock next year. But the changes that we see are not at all unexpected, and that's why we'd like to go out and have the shallow water survey so we can get a better handle on that.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Ron. That's very helpful.
Thank you. And one other thing that is important, you heard the information about the survey and harvest, the predictability there, which is 83%. And I think when you get to this 2008 situation, it was a 34% reduction. That wasn't pulled out of the air. So the science here is very straightforward. Whatever the catch is, it equals the exploitation rate times the abundance as of January 1. Now, you know from last month and from last year and the year before, we wish we knew what catch really was, because catch means dead discards. It means a better recreational estimate. It means all sorts of things. So it's really the harvest. But in 2008, what was done was they had the abundance, the jurisdictions, and they knew what the catch could be because they could set it to whatever that exploitation rate that was desired. So the 34% at that time, it was a choice for the jurisdictions, either 17% males, 17% females, or 34% females, and the jurisdictions chose 34% on females. Hope that helps out a lot. I'm going to start the presentation for today, and just some basic slides. You can see that the value has grown fairly substantially. These are adjusted for the Consumer Price Index of 2016, up around $40 million. I have a little caution about that, and I think last time I told you, we have very few buyers that provide information. They're not required to on price. I hope in the future we'll have more, because it's to their benefit that we have the best dockside value possible, because you never know when that comes in handy in times where, such as 2008, the whole bay needed a bailout, essentially, from National Marine Fisheries Service. So it'd be good to have better information. The harvest is right around 27 million pounds, and mostly all the data are in by now, so that's not going to change a lot.
Hold on. Before we move on, could you back up?
Yes.
One question. Am I interpreting this correctly? 2013, the dockside value landed by watermen, commercial crabbers, was around 25 million.
A little higher, it looks like, yes.
Around that neck of the woods,
right.
27 million, and now we're looking at 40 million? Probably a little bit less in that neck of the wood?
Each other, yes.
So that's the value of the harvest has increased an extra, say, 10 million plus?
The value of the harvest in 2013 was the highest we've seen because supply was controlling that price.
Gotcha.
Over supply.
Okay.
This is something put together that you've seen before, and Megan has updated. Megan did a lot of the charts for me, so that's really good for today. But the orange line is the effort. This is all crab pot fishery, and you can just kind of trace the effort. You can see, similar to the 1998 to 2000 abundance trough, the trough's pretty much there in effort, too. I mean, crabbing did drop off. At the same time, when it drops off, you can see that that doesn't mean there won't be better catches. And at the bottom, you can see the catch per unit effort was pretty high in the years where there weren't substantive regulations, before the commission really enacted regulations that tried to control the harvest and also help the abundance. And so then you see in this area, which is the low period, these were the years that the National Marine Fisheries Service declared the disaster relief was needed, 2004 to 2007. And then you pass on to the rebuilding, the 34% reduction in 2008 on, you do see an increase not only in the overall amount, but you see the pounds per trip increase. So I just wanted to show you that. This is in terms of three things. One, eligibility. So since 2004, really, If you held a crab license in 2004, you were still eligible. You didn't have to buy that license to remain eligible. That was changed in 2010 to say if you had a 2010 license or eligibility, you maintained it as well. So that exists today. So the interesting part is, despite the fact that you have a lot of eligibility, you have licenses that are still above the green line. The green line is who is active. And so, you know, this has been pretty consistent since 2009, at least. You can see these rough years of 2006 and 7 and even 8. And then 2009, it did pick up. It matched the abundance pretty much, but it's relatively flat through today. And over to the right here, you can see the number of licenses, and you can see the percent in these gray bars. So up here, you can see there's been relatively constant the last 3 years in terms of about 73% have been active. And I want to go back to, let me go back to. So you see all this information, you see those bad years. The eligibility dipped, if you notice that. So here we are on the eligibility, and then all of a sudden, boom. 2009, the eligibility drops off. The reason is there was a buyback, and here's the amount of pots essentially that were bought back, 75,000. If we had to guess about how many pots are out there, it might be tough because industry tells us that a lot of people set more than their pot limit, but let's just say about 350,000 pots. So this was a sizable dent. It was $6.7 million. Out of the $15.1 million that the National Marine Fisheries Service gave us. And it varied from license type, from the smaller licenses up to the large 425-pot license and even the peeler pot. And there were some on the waiting list, which still exists, with about 200 people who decided to bail out of the waiting list. There were a few little glitches. They weren't that much, but there were situations where a husband and a wife both had eligibility. They both had licenses. The wife's license was sold. She wasn't using it anyway. You know, that happened about a dozen times, but all in all, there's still licenses that cannot be set again. And there's a part in the regulation that says anyone who sold their license, you're retired. That license is completely retired. So very quickly, I'm just going to run through this to show you that the harvest has 2012 really was a strong spring, and after that, not so strong. 2013, all the way to the right here, low harvest for Virginia, and then things did increase in 2015 and 2016. These are just the daily trips that are taken, and Not a lot of change there, except you do see in 2013 and 2014, they dropped off quite a bit. The harvesters is just the total amount of harvesters. This has a lot, but I think the main thing to look at is the green bars, greenish bars, in that that is the most active category. That's the up to 255 pots, the old 300 pot category. And what you can see is there's still a lot of people who did not do anything either in 2014 or 16. They're just eligible. They're not active. You know, we broke this down into increments, 1 to 25 days. Not a lot to tell about this until you get over to here, where you see about 148 days for the up to 255 pots. Much less here, same thing here, a little bit of a bump up here. In general, the fishing still took place, but at the same time, those who were greater than 150 days, and you see over here out of 239 legal crabbing days, you know, that was a little bit more extensive. And that's all I want to say on that slide. If you look at peeler pot, even a more pronounced trend, this is the buyback right here. But eligibility has remained fairly constant, just under 600, maybe 580. Those who are purchasing licenses stays around 500, and those who are active has been on the decline. You know, it might seem slight here, but it really dropped off to about 300 in 2016. There have been some large concerns that were in the peeler pot fishery that passed away in recent years. There is attrition, and at the same time, it's a very labor-intensive fishery. As far as the harvest goes, 2002 was 2.4 million pounds. That was the height of the peeler harvest. It started to decline over time in this far right-hand column. 2013 was not only a low point for hard crabs, but also peeler crabs. And it has been somewhat steady the last 3 years. Staff continues to worry every chance we get, whether it's at CMAC or anywhere else, to talk about the idea that you need to report everything you harvest. Please don't report what you shed successfully. Report everything you harvest. I mean, there are some good shedders who don't lose very much product, but there also can be a loss that we don't know about. And, you know, it's not very good not to have that all that information. Harvesters around 300 that are actively doing it, and the trips are just how many trips those 300 are taking, and you can see that the peeler season is 50% is really in May, and the rest of the year accounts for the rest of the peeler harvest. Crab Management Advisory Committee had a meeting last Wednesday, almost made a quorum. The previous meeting there was only six. This past meeting, there were eight, including Mr. Tankard and also Mrs. Kellum. So besides those two, there were six individuals. They were fairly active with their discussion, and Katie May not only did the recording, she came back and went through this to get the salient points, and those are that they would like a March 7th, which we're going to get to, through December 10th, crab pot season. If you recall, this would be 2018, March 7th. This would be 2017, ending December 10th. We just came through a situation based on last dredge, Baywide dredge survey results, where the commission allowed for a December 20th closure and also allowed for this 2017 season to open March 1. The season opened, it was pretty good for a little while, and then about mid-March, weather events and everything else sort of tampered that down a little bit. CMAC did say that they would be willing, the members who were there, so it's not a full committee with a vote, but they did sort of agree that they would be willing to have trade-offs, compensation to where the bushel limits in those periods could be lower, as you'll see a little later on, from November 16th to the end of the season, whenever that is, the bushel limits are lower than during other times of the year, except for the March period, where they're equally as low as the November period. And I think that's something that I hope the commission will look at, because that plays right into the juvenile crabs being successful 2018 spawning crabs, as far as letting a season go too far or opening too early. And that's going to come up a little bit too. There was also a request to reinstate the crab pot category limits. So there are five crab pot categories. They've all been decreased by 15% in 2009. They were originally decreased by 30%, and the commission let it go to 15% of the 300 pot, for example, which is now 255. What staff informed the CMAQ members was, to do that, we would need to look at the success rate of the industry. In other words, how many 85 pot holders reached their bushel limit? How many of the 255 pot holders reached their bushel limit? That type of thing. The one thing about this is it's been a sticking point for a lot in industry. They feel that, you know, that was done in 2009. Why do they still have to abide by that? Staff thinks, at least part way, that to reinstate to the full license amount pre-2008 would ease some of those concerns, and we may even end up with more legally fishing. Not that I'm talking about the whole universe, but we would end up with more legally fishing crabbers, that they wouldn't feel compelled to set those extra pots. That is up for the commission to think about. They also had an idea that the sanctuary needs some changes. And one is, I'm going to show you in a little bit the four areas, but essentially in the northern area, it's 1A. In the middle area from the Rappahannock down a ways is 1B. Area 2 is the 1942 sanctuary. How there was such brilliance back in the 1940s to do that, to make that sanctuary, is always surprising to me, but it's been there ever since. And then we have the 3 moves out to the coast area from the 1942 sanctuary, and Area 4 is that coastal strip. So what they wanted was to go back to May 16th for Area 2. And Dr. Lipschitz is here and may have a comment on that, but Area 2 was moved to May 9th in a way to compensate for Area 1A to be open June 1. I guess the question would be, is there enough compensation to think about May 16th, is what the CMAQ is wondering, to get back to that time. A part of their discussion throughout about the sanctuary in that area and the coastal area is the congestion of crabbers in Lynn Haven. And their situation is that it's not a lot, but it's enough that they're on top of each other, and they feel that they would be better advantaged to have a May 16th closure, and definitely better advantaged to have something along the coastal area. That was the conversation at the meeting. And this is the latter part, number 2, a partial opening of Area 5. Last year, the commission reviewed this. Did I say 5? 4. Area 4. Last year, the commission reviewed this and did not accept this, turned it down. This year, there's some at least geographical markers from the Cape to the Cavalier Hotel at 45th Street or no further than 60th Street. So they're looking for a strip that they used to have when they had that whole area open before 2007. And, you know, they think that by having that area open year-round, it would help with this congestion in Lynn Haven. There was also at the very end a request to have fish pound nets available to have a 10 bushel limit of crabs. And you'll see the regulation in a few moments, but it's not one of the authorized gears to have crabs. Staff knows that there have been pound net harvests that have been reported to us in mandatory reporting of crabs. But that was a request specifically of one member at the very end of the meeting. So that sort of sets the stage here a little bit. A later start date, which would really be a later closing date of May 15th, to the current May 9th prohibition on crabbing, and all the areas go until September 15th with the prohibition. I think the thing that I probably misplaced this slide, but that's okay. Area 2 is just about commercial crabbing. Area 3, which you'll see when you see the chart, is commercial and recreational crabbing, and 4 is commercial crabbing. And then they want to carve out a portion of Area 4 that would remain open all season. So here's the sanctuary. This is actually an area where, so I could have goofed it up, we'll check on that, where resale is not allowed. You can recreational fish here. There are two areas you can recreational fish. Which
you got
are
it right, 2 and 4.
2 and 4. I got it right. Okay, good. And, pardon me. And so you see it laid out here. This, of course, the historic sanctuary. Dr. Lipschitz, working with the commission in 2000 and 2001, increased the sanctuary area up through here, and there was a little carve-out in 1994 on the eastern side. And then in 2007, Area 4 was promoted as a sanctuary area, and that was back when there was a change in the sponge crab regulation, to where the sponge crab regulation, it was unlawful to have dark-colored sponge crabs, to possess them through July 15th. And when that was moved back initially to June 30th, that was the compensation for Area 4. So that's how that started out. So this is the sanctuary area. And the main purpose of today is really to have the commission direct staff on what should be advertised for the public hearing in on June 27th, just as last year. The benefit of our process is that we have today, and we don't have to go from one meeting and you make a decision right there. You know, you had the introduction last month in terms of the Baywide winter dredge survey results, and we have this today. So one thing staff is looking at is the lawful season ended in December 20th in 2016. It started March 17th. And then in 2017, this year, the lawful season started March 1. Right now, in the regulation, it's slated to go through December 20th. Everything else, all the other gear types, whether they be crab traps or crab scrapes or crab pounds or crab traps, all the other gear has a season where it would be recommended to stay the same. And that opened April 1 this year in 2017 and ends in October. You may recall a couple of years ago when we first did this in 2014, we really cut off part of the western side and definitely cut off part of the Tangier eastern side, and the commission made adjustments, and this is the last adjustment for the other gear. So staff really started out and has had conversations and looked at this with simply a return to the traditional season. By traditional, that means from 2007, the last decade, 2007 until now, it's been March 17th through November 30th. Prior to that, from 1995 until 2007, it was April 1 through November 30th. So it does speak for there being reasons to not have always a March 1 through December 20th season. Staff is promoting advertising this, and probably the best thing to do, depending on how this can be, is to look at a general type of advertisement, a shortening of the closing of the 2006 season compared to 2016, and a later opening of the 2018 season compared to 2017. So that the idea will be there that everyone will know that there's a change, but they'll know also the commission has the ability to hone in on exactly what those dates should be at the June 27th meeting. Now, also on top of this, the CMAC members who were in attendance are hoping to have a December 10th closure in 2017 and a March, early March like March 7th opening. I think either way, that type of a advertisement captures both those probabilities if the commission wants to do that. So that's one decision point on the season. And frankly, that's the major decision point that staff has looked at so far, because the concern right now is certainly not the spawning age crabs. As a matter of fact, because there's been a market glut to some extent in some areas, and because of the weather events, Dr. Lipschitz told me just before the meeting, he reminded me, which he told me about 8 years ago, that 90% of the female crabs that are overwintering are pre-spawn crabs. They haven't spawned yet. So perhaps with the conditions the way they've been, we have a few more post-spawn crabs that might spawn again. So this is really the to staff, this is the major item, is the season. Because we are worried about the low juveniles. We are worried about the 2018 spawning stock. And those are those juveniles to maturation. So I'm going to let that sink in. I'm going to come back to this. The categories right now, one of the things that CMAQ members mentioned was, let's get our reinstatement of the pots that we used to have. Let's make this 500. We'll make this 100, 150, 200, and 300. And staff will just pose that to you since it was already covered. The other thing that was mentioned was we have these bushel limits, which you can see from July 5th through November 15th, or November 15th, 2016, and April 1 through July 4th, 2017. These are the higher bushel limits, depending on which category of pots. So you could get up to 47 bushels with 425 crab pots. The lower categories are right here. So from November 16th, right now it was through December 20th, but it's really through whatever the end of the season is, and from whatever the beginning of the season is through March 31st, the bushel limits are less. And that's been in place since 2014. The question is, does the commission, based on what the CMAQ members in attendance, want to do two things, not have a March 17th, 2018 opening and a December or November 30th, 2000 closing in 2017, but instead have a March 7th opening in 2018 and a December 10th closing in 2017. Because if the commission does, then we could adjust these bushel limits. And in fact, if we don't get it right, and we don't know yet how much that entails, but if we don't get it right, there's certainly a possibility to come back in June, and even word the announcement so much that this November 16th can be a lower limit as of November 1. These are things staff talked about. So we have experience in 3 years only, in three recent years, with extending the season. Each time we found that the harvest actually came back a little bit less, but that's not a guarantee. The real problem is not in November anyway, because the harvesters drop off after October. The real problem is in March. And we had these lower bushel limits in March, but are they low enough? Yes, sir.
Nope, nothing obvious.
Okay. So I'm going to come back to this at the very end. So this is just sort of seeding the information. Here's something. Glenn Davis from Maryland Department of Natural Resources is the CBSAC chair for about the last year and a half, perhaps. And I just asked him, I said, well, what does it look like for Virginia on the harvest based on the juvenile abundance? And he says, adding the 2015 and 2016 abundance, these are the zeros are known, F0s are known as female juveniles. There's a relationship between the Baywide female juvenile abundance and Virginia's fall female harvest in numbers of crab. And so it does have a pretty good coefficient of determination. About 56% of the variability in the female juveniles is explained by the variability and vice versa in what the fall harvest is. So his note is, based on these data, it looks like 64 million juveniles, pardon me, will turn into 4.64 million pounds of harvest, plus or minus 1.7 million pounds. So that would, at a top, that would be, you know, 6.1, something like that. It's the lowest that staff has seen. When we looked back at 2007 and 2013, 8 million and about 7 million, just under 7 million pounds. So, you know, this was sort of independent. Didn't really ask him to go to this extent, but he did address it, so I wanted to let you know. So we have another regulation, 880, which is a companion to Chapter 270. 270 sets the five categories, but 880 says the maximum amount of crab pots that can be set in either the tributaries of the Bay or the Potomac River tributaries is 255, and in the main stem area of the Bay, it would be 425. So if the commission wants to advertise increasing or reinstating the crab pot category limits that were in place prior to 2008, this regulation would also have to be amended. This again just gives you a snapshot. Alex pitched in here, and it shows you a little more clearly in a nice tabular form exactly what these limits are. And you can see the times November 16th through end of season and any time in March that they are much lower than around the other times of year. There is a license sale moratorium that's been in effect since May of 1999. These are the gear types that have a commercial license assigned to them in that regulation: crab pot, peeler pot, crab scrape, crab trap, ordinary trot line, patent trot line, and dip net are the lawful gear types. So the CMAQ members who at the end said, how about pound net, and the fact that, you know, staff doesn't know right now how often there's been pound net harvest reported to us, but it has been, that's part of this as well. So staff has said that it would relay the CMAQ members, despite there not being a quorum, would relay their information. 1140 governs the crab dredge fishing season, and this would be the 10th year that the commission needs to make a decision on the crab dredge fishery. In 2009, Judge Doyle ruled that it had to be an annual decision, so staff would, of course, be asking the commission to let us advertise that for the public hearing June 27th. So this may be small in some ways, but it has everything that we've talked about on one sheet. And we'll start off with 270. And 270 has the season as its main staff proposed recommendation. To staff is still proposing March 17th, the return to March 17th, which would happen in 2018, and November 30th closure this year in 2017. So that's in 270. In 270-50, these are written almost like an advertisement. There's a request from CMAQ, and in parentheses you can see who has asked for what, and that is shows the pot limits that they've asked to be reinstated. Also in 270, you have the daily harvester vessel and possession limits, and CMAQ is asking for a lower possession limit for any crab pot license categories to offset having a season which they wanted March 7th in 2018 and December 10th in 2017 as a closure. Because of what I just pointed out, the parallel regulation on pot limits in the tributaries in the main stem, currently that's 255 and 425. If anything is advertised, this would have to be advertised to match this regulation. The sanctuary is in Chapter 752. What's been requested was a later start date, and that should be a later closing date, pardon me, of May 15th than the current May 9th period. And everything goes to September 15th in all the sanctuary areas that you're shown on the chart. And this, again, lists the areas where there's commercial and recreational crabbing. And then in addition, the CMAC members present didn't really talk strongly, because this is particular to the Lynn Haven area, the Virginia Beach area, but they, you know, those folks would like to carve out a parcel of Area 4. The next to last one is the license moratorium, which I just went over a few minutes ago, and the pound net situation, should that be a legal gear allowed to harvest crabs? And if so, what should the bushel limit be? Those members offered 10 bushels. Staff doesn't have the idea right now what that means. I mean, really, these are more shallow water pound nets on the eastern shore than anywhere else. And, you know, that's the last item is the winter dredge fishery season to advertise for a closure in the 2017-18 season.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay. Are there questions from the commission or observations? Well, let me kind of frame this a little bit from my perspective. What we're being asked here at the moment is, what do we want to drop off the table for advertising? As you know, we're not even going to consider that. So that's the mission at hand at the moment. Number two, from my perspective, is there might be a couple things that we do just want to drop off the table. So last year, we extended the fall season and we opened up the spring season early. And we did that because we had 271 million juveniles, which was the third highest juvenile level that we had seen in 20 years. So I thought it made entirely good sense here to extend the fall season, open the spring season a bit, because we had a lot of juveniles. Because the juveniles we see now are the harvestable crabs in the fall and next spring, and this year's babies are next year's mamas. But we're in an entirely different position right now. We have 125 million juveniles, which is the fourth lowest. So we went from the third best in 20 years to around the fourth lowest in 20 years, and I'm not sure it is simple as just going back to the way it was for the closure and the opening dates.
Right.
For you all to determine. But I think that I'm hard-pressed to think that we can continue with an extended season like this, especially with changing sanctuary boundaries, adding additional harvest area, giving them back crab pots that they haven't had for years in their gear usage. There's some things that just, I don't see how we can do all of this. The question is, what do you want to drop off the table now? So that's my attempt to kind of put this in a frame for our consideration now. Open for questions and discussion. Mr. Neal.
I may be simplistic in this. First of all, I found all this very informative and educational. Most of this is a request from a non-quorum CMAC committee for increases. That's what pretty much all this is. And I don't know that any of that is that pressing for us to be putting that on the June announcement, request for public hearing. And like I said, this may be too simplistic, but what I would be putting on the public hearing would just be setting the closure date for 2017, the opening date for 2018, and the winter crab dredge fishery. And that would be it for the June fishery. And all this other stuff I'd send for CMAC to continue to discuss it, and we could discuss these things as time goes on. But I don't see any of that's that pressing for June. So, but I agree with what you say. We're looking at doing something to protect these juveniles. Everything else in this list is increasing. And so, I would look at the season and look at – we have to do the crab dredge fishery.
Yes. Rob?
Yeah, so right before Dr. Neal spoke, I was thinking it was important to say that in former times there was a standing crab committee that rigorously investigated many different possibilities back before we even had the good science that we are a benefit of now. And they work things out. Three meetings might get some solution on something. So I did let CMAQ know that I would inform the commission of what they wanted, at least the ones who were here. But, it could have been other members that showed up and said other things. As a matter of fact, when the December 10th closure and the March 7th opening was, comments from the audience were, we don't care about December at all. Let's just get March. I guess what I'm portraying is it's a little bit disconcerting that there's not a committee that's able to put the time into advising the commission. And I always make it clear to them that they're advising the commission just as staff is. We had six members with our previous meeting. Not to say they're all not busy, not to say that they all don't have to be active and they're harvesting, they're doing other things, but it's a much different situation than 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So I just wanted to let you know that on the one hand, I'm sort of duty-bound to report what the non-quorum said. On the other hand, I'm duty-bound to tell you that it wasn't a thinking meeting. By that, I mean no one really dissected and said, well, what if happens and then this happens and what if – it wasn't that type of a meeting.
I guess that goes back to – I'm getting from staff they want to look at these opening and closing dates and from a concern about the juveniles. And so I would go to public hearing on that. You have to go on the winter crab dredge fishery. This other stuff is – I don't know that stuff that's pressing, and it's not coming out of a quorum. It's not coming with any real directive that we have to address at this time. It's something to be addressed this year, be addressed next year.
Mr. Fritz.
Yeah, as a commercial crabber, I can see where we've come a long ways in the last 5 or 6 years. And now that we've reached a point, we've kind of idea of what these numbers mean, I can't see increasing anything, especially when we may be on a little bit of a downward spiral, which can change in 1 year. But most crabbers I know, they're catching what they want with the gear they got. I don't see the need to increase the gear that they're using, extend seasons. We might need to cut back a week on each end or something like that, but I can't see increasing anything, pot limits or.
Well, I'll say the only thing that I would consider in addition to the season closure and the dredge fishery is this request for additional harvest area in the northern end of Virginia Beach. I think the crabbers down in the Lynnhaven River have a valid point that they are kind of on top of each other. There are a couple more crabbers, I think three or four more now full-time crabbers than in previous years there. They've been pretty confined. I'm not sure that area four, designated four there, that entire
right
area is enough. I think that's too much, frankly. But I would consider at least some sort of area there to help alleviate the pressure in the Lynnhaven River system with all those crab pots. Mr. Tacker.
Yeah, I attended the meeting. To me, that may have been the most salient point. I mean, it seemed to me that they made a pretty good case for, why not let us round the bend and take up part of four, the northern part of four.
I think that
Mr. Sanford, I think he's talked to us a couple years about this before.
Yeah, extending it all the way down to the oceanfront, I think, is extremely problematic. We don't want to get into a gear use conflict with people that recreate on the beaches there, but I think a little bit of a release valve for all the intensely concentrated, dense concentration of crab pressure within the Windhaven River, you know, I think it's worth considering. I'm not prejudging it one way or another, but I think I'd be kind of loath to take that off the table at this particular point.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I guess I'm not taking any of it off the table. I'm just saying, what do we need to do in June? But that doesn't affect anything else, I don't guess. I mean, that's not that big. We did discuss that before.
Well, we think that would increase the harvest a bit, don't we, Rob?
Yes. I guess the other sanctuary issue would be something that, if the committee wanted to work on it, and by not having a thinking meeting, what I mean is that committee members came in with an idea that they wanted, things that they wanted, but then there wasn't any follow-up discussion to where you could get enough information to know that their particular request was something that was going to be palatable. I mean, I'll never forget the times the commission has made changes. One was on gray trout way in the past to 10 inches because some people wanted it, and the next month the commission had to come back and do 9 inches, and there are other circumstances like that too. So you need to get a real feel for what they really want. Not to say they don't have their ideas, and Mark Sanford in particular has been promoting this idea about the congestion and about crabbers on top of each other, and they do need some relief. So the other part of the sanctuary wouldn't take effect. The May 16th date closure instead of May 9th would be really for 2018. So that wouldn't be something for June if the commission wanted to consider that. Does not have to be June.
There might be some members of CMAQ here that looked at this as their wish list, and I'm not sure if we ever got to a point, and there have been Crab Management Advisory Committee meetings in the past here where the answer is, this is our wish list. And in effect, we don't care what the abundance level is, we want all of this. There's no such thing as we'll take this and cut back there. It's no conservation equivalency, there's no give and take, this is our wish list, this is what we want. I think there might be a degree of that in here. So I think it's our jobs to right now weed out the stuff that you all think are non-starters, and then we don't advertise them.
Right.
And we focus our efforts on the rest that are starters.
Commissioner, I was asked to hand those out. I thought they were already handed out, and they're right in front of me. So they could be held for the public hearing. We don't usually, until we advertise, we usually don't see those. But when you said wish list, I think that made me look down.
Who wants to continue the discussion? All right, well then, who wants to make a motion?
Not make a motion, but just add that I do agree that the area number four is probably one of the more interesting points that I'd like to discuss. I don't think we could expect CMAQ or crabbers to come up with a conservation equivalency just because they work in different areas, and we've seen that conflict before. But maybe staff, if we're to look at that, could come up with some sort of conservation equivalency measure if we were to open up that number four area somewhat.
I guess, may I? I guess that what I think about is there were, before that area was closed, as a matter of fact, when it was closed in 2007, I don't know whether it was Mark Sanford or someone else, they said, we only have 2 to 3 harvesters who are working in area four. I assume now they're still working in another area. So what they're going to do is transfer their effort to get out of the crowd and get down in an area where others wouldn't really find it the greatest place to be, but it's close to where they are, and it makes a lot of sense to them. So I'm not sure there's a conservation equivalency involved there. I think it's the same people, the same harvesters, moving.
Okay.
I think that's what's involved there.
So we don't think it would increase the harvest necessarily by
I may have said yes to that, but I, when the commissioner asked me earlier, but frankly, I can't see anyone who's crabbing. When you look at those charts overall, anyone who's crabbing is there. It's relatively flat on active crabbers. And again, I'll cite Megan, some work she did, which was to look at where the harvesters were right before the closure of a particular spawning sanctuary. And I think what Megan found, correct me if I'm wrong, was that for the most part, harvesters were pretty close to the county where they were licensed. Do I have that right?
Yeah, they weren't moving with the closure.
So we looked at that. So there is a homebody effect, pretty much. We know the Tangier harvesters will move down to Cape Charles. We do know that in the beginning of the season. We don't know how much now that we've let that sanctuary area close June 1. Probably less so. So, no, I don't think that increases. I don't think we need a trade-off.
Wait.
Yeah, I know.
Mr. Fritz.
The commissioner spoke about maybe Area 4, dividing it into some kind of ways, or some kind of geographical options you can give us to look at.
Yeah. Yes. The other night, again, Mark Sanford will be popular today, but I think I have it. He had the coordinates in there. I think it was from the Cape coming down to where I think it's the old Cavalier Hotel, and then across. But then he said nothing less than 60th Street. 60th Street would be the other one. So we could have that. And, you know, that would be the type of thing that could be advertised, not specifically, but with boundaries.
Okay, so we're in agreement for that to be to go to the public notice, I think.
That's fine.
I think we're good for the closure date for this year and the opening date for next year to be advertised, to give us some leeway on where to set that. The crab dredge fishery, the winter dredge fishery, it's got to be part of the public notice. Yes.
May I hear you state the closing and opening dates?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the reduced fall bushel limit and the reduced spring bushel limit, do we need to consider those at all?
Well, I guess what I'm wondering, staff is promoting the return to the somewhat traditional season, which would end November 30th this year and begin on March 17th of next year. If the commission allows staff to advertise that, then the bushel limits can stay the way they are, unless the commission thinks there needs to be any change in the bushel limit by itself, which staff is not promoting. Staff thinks that all jurisdictions are at least going to have some type of equivalent conservation. The Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee, they haven't made it official yet, but they have also, and Joe can tell you, have indicated that there is concern in their advice to management about the low juvenile stock, which is the spawning stock of 2018. So no, bushel limits could remain as are.
Big picture. If the thought is to put it back the way it was before we expanded it this year, does that fully address this abnormally low number of juveniles? We put it back to where it was. Does that get us where we need to be in the conservation of the juveniles we see this year that'll be the spawners for next year? Is that enough?
May I call a character witness, Dr. Lipschitz?
Dr. Lipschitz.
Come up here, please.
Do you concur that Mr. O'Reilly is a character? All right. We have consensus.
You heard everything?
All right. I heard everything. There was a lot. So what you're asking is that if we return back to what it was before last year for the fall, that we would expect that to provide some protection for the 8-0s. And I think my opinion would be that it would help to do that. The other thing that makes me feel a little more confident is something that we're not aware of, and that is that we've been conducting a May shallow water survey. We had a little bit of funding to do that. We didn't have sufficient funding to do the shallow water survey in winter. So we've tried to do something instead of, and we're seeing a lot of very small crabs out there, which makes me feel a little better in our lower bay-wide survey for that. So ultimately the answer is yes. I think that it would certainly help to offset or reduce some of the fishing mortality.
Well, Rob, the question is whether or not it's enough. To go back to where we were, I would think, would put us in those years when we're looking at 350, 198, 258 in that area, but we're dealing with now 125 million juveniles.
Right.
It would seem to me that's a bigger mountain to climb than we've faced in the past. Ultimately, the goal from my perspective is to keep this trend going. So we've seen increased abundance, we've seen increased females, spawning age females, we've seen increased harvest. I personally don't want to risk that by getting cold feet about fully dealing with the low juvenile level that we have now.
Right.
How's that for putting my cards on the table?
Right. So I would agree with you. I would say that I wouldn't be sufficiently confident that would be enough. I would say that to be risk averse, you may want to have some slightly stricter regulations for the fall. I mean, and that's based on the fact that we just don't have a strong relationship between the juveniles and spawning stock as we do between our survey and harvest. So, yes, I think there's more risk involved. So it's a greater risk that would not be sufficient to protect enough 8-0s to give us this, keep the spawning stock where it is.
Mr. Fritz.
Yeah, you're talking about going back to the way it was. We also extended peel a pot season a little bit and crab pound, too. Would that also come into this?
Yeah, because that would hit. I mean, you're hitting the pre-adult stages for the most part early on. So, yes, I would agree that would help as well.
Chief?
Okay. So,
Rob, thank you
very much. And don't leave because, you know, you're a character witness.
You don't leave the room.
So one thing that staff would propose listening to Dr. Lipschitz, and it's something staff has talked about, is to, when you hear about the fall, Maryland will maybe, I don't know for sure, truncate their season on females. How far back into November, I don't know. The commission could establish the same bushel limits that are in place now as of November 16th. If I can find Alex's slide, there we go. So right now we have these lower bushel limits. For each pot category, they start November 16th. Granted, there might be, on average, 250 to 270 harvesters left in November, but we could go back to November 1st. And staff has talked about that. you know, that that would be a little extra added measure. I think on the Peeler situation, remember that in 2014, we really crunched it back so that when they opened that season in 2015, it was May 1, and the Peelers are already there in abundance. So I think the April 1 through October 31 is still conservation compared to the fact that it used to be just coinciding with the crab pot season entirely. And I think we're okay there. But based on what Dr. Lipschitz said and that staff has discussed going back to November 1 with these lower bushel limits, that could be the added approach for those juveniles. Because, you know, they're heading, as the Maryland crabs are heading after October, early November, to the spawning, you know, to the overwintering areas. So that's the suggestion.
Mm-hmm. My sense is that that gives us a bit of flexibility with the closure date for this year and the opening day for next year. Maybe that's a smart thing to put on the table for us to be able to fine-tune the throttle.
No, I think it makes sense for sure. I mean, it is strange that we have such a low number of juveniles.
It's,
mm-hmm.
So this would be after,
what do you think?
It's particularly strange, I think, because if anything, I would have expected there to be more juveniles because of the warmer temperatures that we had overall. So you would expect that more of them would have grown into the size that would be surveyed by the winter dredge survey. So yeah, there's some definite reason to be concerned about the situation. Now the young juveniles that I was talking about, my staff, they can give you some details on that, but that may actually be because of the spawning season may now be a little bit extended since it's been warmer. Because I know some crabbers were talking about there being spawning crabs, sponge crabs, mm-hmm. in December.
Yeah.
And we caught a couple even in the winter dredge survey.
Wow.
So, yeah, things are changing. I mean, global warming is with us. So there's a reason to be concerned that I would not have expected this. I would have expected the survey to catch a larger fraction, if anything, this year. And the fact that we didn't concerns me. So, yeah. And what you're likely to hear as well is that we are seeing a lot of very small crabs in the seagrass beds and such. So what you're going to hear from the crabbers is that, hey, we're seeing a lot of these. But those aren't the ones that we would have surveyed. Those are different. And it may offset the reduction of those eight zeros from the survey some, but
I would think that those crabs are particularly vulnerable to predators.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Once predation sets in. And cannibalism.
A crab that small, will he enter the fishery by this fall?
That size crabs, I'm not so sure. I mean, those are very small crabs, and we do have a large, we do have a fraction of the crabs that don't quite make it to legal size, even for the Peeler fisheries. So my guess is that those are going to, it's going to be dicey whether or not those actually enter the fishery. They might late fall.
Yeah. So if I think I have, not trying to drive the train here, but if I think I sense that everybody is on the page with this, we would also advertise here on the crab pot daily possession limit from November 1st until the season closure, whatever that would be, and the bushel limit in March, whatever degree of season we decide on in March, the crab pot bushel limit in March right there. We might want to lower that enough a bit, or at least have that open for an option.
I think you should have it open for an option.
Are we in concurrence on this?
I'm looking at Rob's making strange faces.
Rob, please jump in.
Okay. here's the cascade of events. I started out by saying we could advertise a shorter season by closing earlier and then turn around and open later in 2018 compared to the season we just went through. If we advertise it that way, now that you've had your discussion, if we advertise it that way and you have your public hearing and you wish to say somewhere less than March 17th in 2018 and somewhere greater than November 30th in 2017, staff will not have worked up or tried to work up compensation. So the four things that I thought I heard are: go back to the traditional season that lasted since 2007. The dredge fishery has to be decided for the season. Carve out an area in Area 4 of the sanctuary areas that would be open for harvesting, and reduce the crab pot bushel limit starting November 1 instead of November 16th to the amount that you see on the screen for each category. So, I'm not trying to do more than try and categorize, because, you know, there was discussion at CMAC, but not to the extent where it was finite. You know, one member did want a certain season. Other members in the audience were saying, no, that's, we don't want December, as I mentioned before. So the commission will have more of that, probably. And staff's recommendation is from 1995 until 2016, we had less or the same season that staff is proposing now.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Frantz.
Yeah, I know we want to get this so we can discuss it this summer and make a decision on it for the fall, but do we have to make a decision for when we're going to open it next spring at the same time? Or can we wait till winter and do that after we have more information?
I think the situation is that we move to a July 5th through July 4th framework for our regulation, and the main regulation is Chapter 270, and that's the one that has all the solid management.
Okay. And part of the reason for that, Mr. Frantz, is so that we don't end up here making regulation changes that only impact half the fishery. If we're at a point here where we're only doing something in basically in a calendar year, we're not necessarily encapsulating all the potential that we could get here for a wraparound for the full season to encompass both the fall and the spring in this regard. I would rather deal with this all together as a package as opposed to piecemeal it out, which I kind of think is what you were kind of suggesting there. I think that we need to put this together as a package as opposed to two pieces, and that leaves the harvesters unsure of what the next half of the year is going to bring. I think we need to give them some degree of stability in all this and some expectation of knowing what to expect.
Mr. Ballard.
Just, it would be easier for me if staff could come up with a suggestion here. I rely on you guys a lot. You gave me my correlation of fish, and so I'm happy.
Sure.
Just whatever you think we're coming up at here.
Thank you for the opportunity. I think that we should not only depend on ourselves, I think we also have to depend on the Potomac River Fisheries Commission and the Maryland Department of Natural Resources to bridge this situation that we have with juveniles. And I think that's mainly what we're trying to do. So I think that my suggestion would be a season that ended November 30th, 2017, and began, for this is the crab pot season, began March 17th, 2018, with keeping the other gear types other than the crab pot to the same April 1 to October 31 season that we moved into slowly from 2014. Also would recommend that we do, for an extra ounce of risk aversion or caution, that we do move these bushel limits that are lower in November, November 16th now, that we move those back to November 1. So November 1 through the end of the season, which, again, staff's recommending is November 30th, would be at the reduced bushel limits. And then for the winter dredge fishery season, staff has just advertised it as a closure of that season. That doesn't mean the commission has to close it. That's just the way staff has been advertising it. And then the last item would be to establish a portion of Area 4 in the coastal area sanctuary that would be open to crabbing. And I think all those have been talked about by the commission as well.
That sounds good to me.
I move we take that to public notice.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Neal, second by Mr. Ballard. Any discussion?
Yes. So we're going to open on March the 17th.
Of 2018.
Will there be any bushel limit reductions for the start of that?
It's already there. It's been there since 2014.
So it'll be the same one that we've had.
Yes, sir.
But it'll just go till the 1st of April.
Let me get that for you, sir. There we go.
So, Mr. French, just to correct the point here, it's not we're deciding now to do it. We're deciding now the parameters on that would be the earliest that we would open it, because that's okay. The earliest that we've advertised to be
right.
Able to open it.
As early as November 1. Yeah.
The actual decisions would be next month. A lot more discussion.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page with that.
Sure.
And Dr. Lipschitz, what do you think of that?
I'm in full agreement.
And will you be here next month?
I think you will be here next month. May not be, actually. I have to double check. I'm supposed to be here. I may be here.
It would be really good.
I can send another character with
you. We have a motion and a second on the table here to send out the notice, public notice, advertised notice for next month's meeting. Any further discussion on that? Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Motion passes unanimously. Thus, our horizon of options is set for next month.
Hardest public notice request we've ever had.
That's a complicated issue. Lots of moving parts.